Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. We're going to tackle something quite specific today, really looking closely at the material you've provided. We've got this collection of sources, articles, research notes, and the plan is to really unpack them together.
Exactly. We want to pull out the most important insights, understand the very long and complicated relationship between Greeks and Kurds.
Yeah, it's not just a quick summary. We're hoping to find those key links, maybe some surprising connections, and just get a better handle on what shaped this history over, centuries.
It's a huge time frame, isn't it? You've got things going way back to ancient times, then interactions within big empires like the Byzantine, the Ottoman.
Right. And then those really crucial moments, often quite difficult ones, in the early 20th century.
And that brings us right up to today, diaspora communities, diplomacy, the whole regional picture. So we'll guide you through the sources, highlighting what really jumps out.
Okay, let's dive in. The sources mention some really early contacts pointing to Kurdish ancestors way back, like the land of Karta in Mesopotamia around 3000 BC. That's ancient.
It really anchors their presence in the region for millennia. But for a clearer interaction with Greek speakers, Xenophon's Anabasis from 401 BC is key.
Ah, yes, the 10,000. His account of their retreat.
Precisely. He talks about passing through the territory of the Karduchoi.
Described as pretty fierce, weren't they?
Very. Independent mountain people, often seen as, early Kurds. Xenophon makes it clear they strongly resisted the Greeks crossing their land. So that's an early snapshot, a conflictual one in that region, Gordian or Corduain.
Which lines up with historical Kurdish areas, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of southeastern Turkey, northern Iraq today.
Broadly, yes. Then fast forward several centuries, and these same regions become this really volatile borderland between the Greek-speaking Byzantine Empire and the rising Arab Caliphate from the 7th century onwards.
So they're right in the middle. Constant interaction, I imagine.
Constant. And while often antagonistic, the sources also point to, pragmatic alliances. The Caliphate used Kurdish forces on the frontier.
And the Byzantines, too, interestingly. Emperor Theophilus in the 9th century?
Right, 829 to 842 AD. He famously welcomed a large group, maybe 30,000 Kuramites. This was a kind of politico-religious movement rebelling against the Abbasids, and sources suggest Kurdish elements were involved.
30,000, that's a significant number.
Huge. Theophilus integrated them into his army. He saw them as good soldiers, maybe a useful counterweight internally. And the sources get specific. Their leader, Nasser, converts, becomes Theophobos.
Theophobos, right. Baptized, marries Theophilus' sister.
Exactly. Even Byzantine writers like Michael the Syrian apparently called these Kuramites Herdane, linking them to Kurds. It's quite a striking level of integration.
But it wasn't straightforward, was it? The sources mentioned tensions.
Oh, definitely not. Theophobos' forces became powerful, maybe too powerful. There were fears they'd try to make him emperor. And that led Theophilus to, imprison and execute him just before the emperor himself died in 842. But a cautionary tale, really. Shows how alliances with big powers could be precarious. A recurring theme, perhaps, in Kurdish history.
And it seems identity labels back then were more fluid. Sometimes Byzantines called groups Persians, even if others identify them as Kurds.
Yeah, labels could be broad, influenced by who was writing and why. But assimilation was possible. Look at Theophobos converting, marrying in. Identities weren't totally fixed.
Another major point in the sources is the shift towards Islam among Kurds around 640 AD, according to some Greek accounts.
And those accounts suggest it was partly seen as an escape from perceived Byzantine and Persian pressure or oppression.
Which creates a big religious difference with the Christian Byzantines.
A huge one. That divergence would complicate relations significantly moving forward, adding that religious layer to everything.
So from those early clashes and complex, sometimes conditional alliances, we move into the long stretch under Ottoman rule.
Yes, centuries where Greeks and Kurds lived within the same empire. But, and this is crucial, their experiences and how they were governed were really quite different.
How so?
Well, after Çaldıran in 1514, where Kurdish leaders sided with Sultan Selim I, many Kurdish areas, Ottoman Kurdistan, were given a lot of autonomy. These weren't directly ruled provinces.
More like semi-autonomous emirates, like Baban, Soran, Botan.
Exactly. Hereditary principalities providing loyalty and acting as a buffer against Safavid Iran. That system, based on strategic need, lasted for a long time.
Okay, so that's the Kurdish side. How did Greek integration compare?
Very different. Greeks, as Orthodox Christians, fell under the rum millet system. They had legal limitations as demi, sure, but also considerable autonomy over religious and community matters through the Patriarchate in Constantinople.
And certain Greek families, the Phanariots, became very influential centrally.
Deeply embedded, high-level administrators, diplomats, interpreters. So you have these Kurdish emirates, powerful locally but peripheral to the center, versus Greek elites integrated right into the heart of the Ottoman bureaucracy. Very different paths.
Until the 19th century, when things really start to shift with Ottoman centralization, the Tanzimat reforms.
Yes, those reforms aimed to centralize control, which directly clashed with the Kurdish emirate's autonomy. They were abolished, leading to Kurdish uprisings. And you see religious leaders, the sheikhs, gaining more authority as the traditional emirs lost power.
At the same time, you've got European powers pushing for Christian rights, Ottoman reform decrees.
And Greek nationalism is surging, leading to the War of Independence, the Greek Kingdom. It's a period of immense change and pressure.
The sources mention complex interactions in those eastern provinces, even moments of potential alliance, like Sheikh Ubaidullah in 1880 trying to work with Nestorians and Armenians.
It shows it wasn't just about conflict between groups, but then you get the Ottoman state employing divide-and-rule tactics.
Which brings us to the Hamidi regiments, formed in 1891.
Right. Primarily Sunni Kurdish tribal cavalry, officially for frontier defense, but clearly also meant to control Armenian communities and keep Kurdish tribes in line.
And they became notorious for their role in violence against Armenians.
Tragically, yes. Involved in massacres in the 1890s and later. This system empowered certain tribes loyal to the state, but massively inflamed tensions with Christian neighbors, often over land and resources.
Which connects to the suffering of the Pontic Greeks later on, during the Ottoman collapse.
Absolutely. The persecutions, deportations, massacres between 1914-1923 happened in this context of state breakdown and rising nationalism. Sources confirm Ottoman authorities, sometimes using irregulars, including Hamidi elements, committed atrocities, though the Turkish narrative often frames it differently as suppressing a separatist movement.
So Ottoman state policy is central, but some Kurdish irregulars participated under command.
That's what the sources suggest regarding the Hamidi. But it's vital to remember, it wasn't uniform. Other sources mention Alevi Kurds in Dersim protecting Armenians.
Right, so internal divisions existed and the state exploited them. Can't paint everyone with the same brush.
Precisely. It highlights the danger of assigning collective blame and underscores the different trajectories, Greek elites navigating the center, Kurdish leaders dealing with peripheral autonomy, and then its loss.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbosh, Hannah. Ooh, lovely timing. Let's see. Yeah, this is good today. Nice and sweet. Sometimes it's a bit better. Needs more sugar. But this one is perfect. Short pause. Okay, feeling refreshed. Let's get back to it. We've covered the ancient and Ottoman periods, which leads us into the real crucible of the early 20th century.
A time of massive upheaval. World War I, the Ottoman Empire dissolving, competing nationalisms, and Sykes-Picot in 1916 already sketched out divisions, ignoring local wishes.
Then comes the Treaty of Sèvres in 1920. Your sources call it a brief moment of hope.
For both, but in very different ways. For Kurds, Articles 62-64 offered potential autonomy, even a path towards independence via the League of Nations, including Mosul. Unprecedented.
And for Greeks,
it looked like the Megali idea coming true: administration of Smyrna, western Anatolia, eastern Thrace. Turkey severely reduced.
But Sèvres was rejected, forcefully, by Turkish nationalists under Mustafa Kemal.
Vehemently. Kemal fought to keep Anatolia intact, denying non-Turkish identity. Kurds became mountain Turks. The Greco-Turkish war that followed was brutal.
Ending in Turkish victory and the huge displacement of Greeks from Asia Minor. The catastrophe.
Which made Sèvres irrelevant. That leads directly to the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923.
And Lausanne is where the paths really diverge, isn't it?
Fundamentally. Lausanne recognized the Republic of Turkey within its modern borders. For Kurds, a disaster. No mention of autonomy, no statehood. Their lands were split between Turkey, Iraq, Syria.
And crucially, under Lausanne, Kurds in Turkey weren't seen as a national minority with specific rights.
Exactly. Minority protections were mainly for non-Muslims. Greeks, Armenians, Jews. This legally formalized Kurdish statelessness and division. Kurds see it as a historic injustice, a confiscation of all rights. It enabled decades of assimilation policy.
Whereas for Greeks, Lausanne meant huge losses, the end of the Anatolian dream, the traumatic population exchange.
About 1.5 million Orthodox Christians forced out of Turkey, 500,000 Muslims out of Greece. an end to millennia of Greek history in Asia Minor.
So it also consolidated the modern Greek state. Painfully, but it happened.
So you have Greek state consolidation versus formalized Kurdish statelessness across multiple countries. That difference is absolutely central to everything that followed.
The sources also stress the role of the great powers Britain, France, Italy. Their priorities shifted.
Definitely. From tentatively supporting minority states at Sevres, they shifted to backing a stable, unified Turkey at Lausanne. Pragmatism ruled containing the Soviets, securing oil like in Mosul.
Smaller nations' aspirations sacrificed for big power interests. Obring's view mentioned in the sources.
Yes, that Western powers actively prioritized a strong Turkey and opposed a Kurdish state.
And that focus in Lausanne on religious minorities gave Turkey the legal cover to deny national rights to Muslim Kurds.
Precisely. It justified policies like the Şark Islahat Planı, the Eastern Reform Plan of 1925 aimed at assimilation.
Okay, so that diversion sets the stage for the modern era. Let's talk contemporary Greek and Cypriot relations. There's a significant Kurdish diaspora in Greece, right?
Yes, mostly arriving from the 1990s onwards, people fleeing conflict, persecution, mainly from Turkey and Iraq. Numbers are hard to pin down exactly, but estimates suggest maybe around 40,000 by the mid-2010s, concentrated in Athens, Thessaloniki, and the well-known Lavrion camp.
You've been there a long time. Greece, often a transit point, too.
Often, yes. And this diaspora is active culturally, politically. You see cultural centers, protests for rights, support for Öcalan, demonstrations against Turkish military actions.
How are relations described between the diaspora and the Greek population generally?
The sources suggest generally positive. There seems to be a level of empathy, perhaps linked to Greece's own history of refugees from Asia Minor. You find quotes from officials like Ioannis Mizalas talking about exceptional ties, or academics like Yalorides noting similar struggles for identity. Though, of course, being a refugee anywhere brings challenges.
But the diaspora's presence, especially the Lavrion camp, causes friction with Turkey.
Huge friction. Turkey has consistently accused Greece, particularly since the 90s, of harboring PKK militants, calling Lavrion a PKK base.
So Greece has to walk a fine line.
A very delicate balancing act. Humanitarian duties, freedom of speech on one side, managing the crucial, complex relationship with Turkey on the other. Greece denies the accusations, but occasional media images of PKK symbols don't help.
What about official Greek foreign policy towards Kurdish groups? The sources suggest it's differentiated.
It seems quite pragmatic, yes. There are formal ties with the Kurdistan Regional Government, the KRG, in Iraq. Greece upgraded its office in Erbil to a consulate general around 2016-17.
Why the engagement with the KRG?
Seen as geostrategically important, according to former Foreign Minister Katsias. Greece noted the 2017 KRG independence referendum was a constitutional right, and they've provided some aid, even Kalashnikovs, for the Peshmerga fighting ISIS.
But more cautious towards Rojava, the ANES in Syria.
Apparently, yes. The preference seems to be for Kurdish autonomy within Syria, stressing protection for all minorities. There's engagement conferences hosted in Athens, but it's more tentative given the ANES status. And of course, the PKK itself is listed as terrorist by the EU and NATO, which limits official contact severely.
We can't avoid mentioning the Öcalan affair in 1999.
Absolutely critical and deeply damaging. Öcalan's capture after seeking refuge, including that very controversial time involving Greece and the Greek embassy in Nairobi.
The perception among many Kurds was not good.
Extremely negative. Figures like Murat Karayılan saw it as Greek government complicity or, at best, total incompetence leading to his capture. A betrayal of friendship, causing deep trauma. It really hurt trust, especially with the Greek left.
Despite that, sources note Greece has a relatively high acceptance rate for Kurdish asylum seekers, case by case. And different Greek parties have slightly different nuances.
Yes. Some center-right figures supported the KRG referendum. The left, like Syriza, has roots in sympathy for the Kurdish struggle, though strained by Öcalan. Generally, parties now align with the EU framework on the PKK.
But the big constraint is always Turkey.
Overwhelmingly, Turkey's security focus, viewing most Kurdish political activity through the lens of the PKK, forces Greece to be very careful, despite public sympathy.
Okay, let's shift to Cyprus. Their approach seems heavily influenced by the Cyprus problem, the divisions in 74.
Profoundly. It makes Nicosia very focused on sovereignty and territorial integrity. So you don't find many direct official statements in these sources about Kurdish self-determination in general.
But they do engage with the KRG.
There's evidence of that. A Cypriot delegation visited Erbil in April 2025 looking for cooperation, often framed around shared values like protecting minorities and religious coexistence.
Yet their own situation with the unrecognized TRNC makes them cautious about separatism elsewhere.
Inherently cautious. And like Greece, Cyprus faces accusations from Turkey and Turkish Cypriot officials like Erzin Tatar claiming they support the PKK.
Allegations about passports for Ocalan, allowing PKK offices.
Right. These seem part of Ankara's strategy to undermine the Republic of Cyprus and counter solidarity. It forces Nicosia towards public caution regarding militant groups.
The sources mention a Cypriot Kurdish Solidarity Association, suggesting some organized presence.
Yes. Mentioned in a U.S. state debt report, it implies advocacy within the Republic, contrasting with reports of Kurdish students being deported from the Turkish-controlled north. So Cyprus has this duality. Sympathy for groups pressured by Turkey, but a firm stance on international law and sovereignty because of their own history.
And all this plays out in the Eastern Mediterranean, a really critical zone now.
Energy, security, power plays. Greece and Cyprus have clear interests. Stability, Cypriot sovereignty, minority rights, EU security. They're wary of Turkish influence. You see things like the EastMed Gas Forum, excluding Turkey.
And Kurdish entities are trying to secure their own autonomy and security in this region.
So there's a potential overlap in interest, maybe in counterbalancing some Turkish policies. Greece supports Kurdish autonomy within Iraq and Syria. The KRG is seen as strategically relevant.
But it's complicated.
Very. Kurdish groups aren't states. Greece and Cyprus are in the EU, NATO. The KRG itself has complex, necessary dealings with Turkey, especially on oil, plus internal Kurdish politics, the U.S. role. It's messy.
Energy could be a future factor, though, if discoveries impact regional flows involving Kurdish areas.
It could indirectly link their interests, yes, depending on how Turkey manages energy transit and how that affects the broader East Med picture. It adds another potential layer.
Okay, let's try to pull the main threads together from all this material. We've covered this vast sweep, ancient encounters, imperial coexistence and conflict, the huge divergence after Lausanne, and today's complex web of diaspora, diplomacy, and geopolitics.
And looking across that history, a few things really stand out from the sources. One is that shared experience of being a minority, facing displacement Greeks from Anatolia, Kurds across multiple states. It seems to create a basis for empathy, especially in Greece.
Yeah, that comes through. And the constant defining impact of Ottoman and then Turkish state policies, it shapes both their histories and their relationship with each other, often creating that difficult triangular dynamic with Ankara.
Absolutely. Then there's the tension you see again and again. Mm-hmm. Pragmatic state interests needing stability, managing alliances, dealing with Turkey versus a kind of grassroots or ideological solidarity with Kurdish struggles, often born from that shared history.
So states having to balance those things. And also how both Greek and Kurdish identities were partly formed in opposition to another Turks for Greeks, the denying states for Kurds.
Looking at today, the relationship is still quite asymmetrical, isn't it? Kurdish groups often seeking support from states like Greece and Cyprus. While there's that grassroots solidarity, official policy in Athens and Nicosia is driven by pragmatism and heavily shaped by relations with Turkey.
So support is likely clearest for recognized entities like the KRG, where it aligns with geostrategic interests, stability, energy, maybe a bit of counterbalancing, more caution elsewhere.
Exactly. It often feels like a relationship by proxy, as you said, mediated through their individual dealings with Ankara. Direct engagement happens, like Greece KRG ties, but it's always operating under that constraint.
Shared history or even a shared challenge isn't enough for a full strategic alignment, given the power differences and internal Kurdish complexities.
No, the priorities and capabilities are too different. The future likely depends on what happens within the Kurdish region's stability, recognition plus broader regional shifts, and maybe new economic links like energy or trade, moving beyond just the political Kurdish question.
It's a relationship with incredibly deep roots, shaped profoundly by outside forces, and still navigating a really complex present.
We've certainly covered a lot of ground, from Xenophon's Karduchoy to East Med energy politics.
A long and intricate story.
Still unfolding.
So here's something to think about. As Kurdish aspirations continue to evolve in a region defined by state borders and powerful neighbors, how might shared histories of navigating imperial pressures and seeking identity find new expression or be constrained by the geopolitical realities of the Eastern Mediterranean?
That's the crucial question, isn't it?
It is. Thank you for exploring this complex topic with us today.